This is episode 407 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, October the 22nd, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, the electronic media in Australia is back in the news as the Nine Network is given a lifeline, the Ten Network starts to head south, and the recalcitrant Alan Jones is sent off to journalism school. What? The shock jock isn't qualified? Also this week, Google has resisted nearly two-thirds of Australian government requests to remove content from its massive online archive. The world's best-known BitTorrent site, the Pirate Bay, has switched over to cloud-based hosting in an effort to cut costs, improve uptime, and data security. But most of all, made itself almost invulnerable to police raids. Also, your iPhone 5 was probably made by underage labour, and Microsoft announced that it will release a version of its long-awaited Internet Explorer 10 web browser for Windows 7 in the middle of next month to coincide with the general availability of the new Windows 8 operating system. Don't forget there's the usual odd spot gadget app and website of the week. First up, though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Google halts trading after the premature release of a profit report. Channel 9 narrowly avoids being placed into administration. The 10 Network calls for 100 voluntary redundancies in its newsrooms. Western Australian police launch a sex offenders website. And beleaguered HP finds itself in court for alleged breaches of consumer rights. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Shares in search giant Google were placed in a trading halt last week after the premature release of a quarterly trading report. Google's CEO, Mr. Larry Page, blamed the error on a printing company in which the report was made public, missing analysts' estimates for profits and sales. The early release of the report sparked a panic sell-off of Google's stock, and its share price plummeted by as much as 10%. Mr. Page tried to put a positive spin on the incident.
I'm sorry for the scramble earlier today. As our printers have said, they had sent on the release just a bit early. I'm really happy with our business. And at just 14 years old, we cleared our first $14 billion revenue quarter. Not bad for a teenager.
Analysts' reactions were varied to the trading halt. Some thought it was the right thing to do, while others criticized Google, particularly in light of January's earnings report, which also sent Google's stock down by 8%. Google's shares closed at the time of the trading halt down $60 to $695 a share. The Nine Entertainment Group has narrowly avoided being placed into administration. The group, which includes the Nine Television Network, is over $3 billion in debt. CEO Mr. David Gingell had warned earlier in the week that the group could be placed in receivership if lenders were unable to agree on a deal at last week's meeting. The meeting took place between CEO Mr. Gingell and the company's debt holders, including Apollo Global Management, Oaktree and Goldman Sachs. At a subsequent media conference in Sydney, Mr. Gingell said he was very pleased with the outcome and the future of the Nine Network.
So what I'd say, rock and roll for next year, so thank you very much.
When you say debt-free, what exactly do you mean? What deal has been struck?
No debt at all.
How has that been done?
Well, we have a fully capitalised business. Goldman Sachs receives a certain percentage of equity and the rest of the company will be controlled by the hedge funds. So that means you have no debt, so thank you very much.
Are all the players happy with the deal?
I'm not sure if all the players are happy, but I certainly am. Yeah, this is a good day for business, but personal life is much better, thank you.
Obviously keen to get home now after a long day.
Yeah, I'm just going off to go see my family, so thank you very much.
Mr. Gingell went on to describe Nine as the most powerful media balance sheet in the country and said he was incredibly proud. Mr. Gingell said Goldman Sachs would receive a small equity stake, while Oaktree and Apollo would own the bulk of Nine Entertainment. Nine was under pressure because of Australian corporation law, which stipulates that no company is allowed to continue trading beyond a deadline to repay its debts. In other television news, the Ten Network posted a significant loss last week before calling for voluntary redundancies from its newsrooms. In Sydney, it's expected that up to 40 journalists will lose their jobs from Ten News, and another 60 journalists will lose their jobs from the Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth newsrooms. A Ten spokesperson said it would centralise its behind-the-scenes news staffing but maintain state-based 5pm news bulletins. Industry analyst Mr. Steve Allen spoke on ABC Radio last week. He said ratings and programming were at the source of Ten's financial dilemmas.
Ten have found themselves in a very difficult position. Their ratings are lacklustre. They've rushed a whole bunch of North American programs back on air that had previously done reasonably well, some of them very well, and they're just not producing the viewing audiences because they're caught in a squeeze play with 9 and 7 and the ABC to some extent hammering out ratings winners.
The redundancies are part of a drive for the network to cut $10 million in costs from its bottom line after reporting a full-year net loss of $12.9 million following a $14 million profit just 12 months ago. Police in Western Australia will publish information about known sex offenders that the Correction Service releases back into the community. A new website has been launched which lists offenders' names, dates of birth, photographs, physical descriptions and other details. The state's police minister, the Honourable Liza Harvey, on ABC Radio.
This has been a bit of a balancing act between community safety and also managing the ability of the police to manage dangerous sex offenders and reportable offenders in the community. It is a tool that we've got, I think will be useful for parents to try and help to keep their children safe.
But despite police assurances, the WA's Criminal Law Association is worried about how some members of the community will deal with the website. The Criminal Law Association's Ms. Linda Black on ABC Radio.
The concern is that if these people are identified down the track, potentially at a time where they have rehabilitated, whether people will try and track them down in some kind of vigilante action and take their version of the law into their own hands.
The website was a 2008 election promise by the Western Australian government. And Australia's beleaguered Hewlett-Packard will appear in Sydney's federal court after being charged by the ACCC for alleged contraventions of Australian consumer law. In a statement released last week, the ACCC says HP has breached Australian law by telling customers that broken devices such as computers, laptops and printers could only be remedied at HP's sole discretion. A spokesperson for HP said it takes seriously the matters raised by the ACCC and will fully investigate and respond appropriately. The case is listed for the 7th of December. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Set 2. What does that mean?
Watch this space. You'll hear Lena's phone chirp to life very shortly.
Beep, beep. But the Duna suit, look it up and tell me you don't want one. Seriously.
Why wasn't this on the cover of every newspaper in the world?
There's also a bypass socket for gear that needs to stay switched on, such as your personal video recorder.
Perhaps let us know if it's actually going to be a reality at some point.
Yeah, good.
How is baby form?
What kind of price point would an iPad mini be?
And that went away and got replaced with something that wasn't as good.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Don't
go there.
Oversight.
Don't go there. 47 different music tracks started playing at once.
Asterisk, it wasn't that simple, asterisk.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Something of words to that effect. What happened?
Gary says.
Says.
Can you equivocate a little bit more, Lena? I think you...
No, I think I did that well.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
We're back. Hello, Dr. Ron.
Hello, Andrew. How are you this week?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Excellent.
Been away, been up the bush.
You have.
It's been good. I churned through more mobile broadband in the last 48 hours than I think I've ever done since the last Tech Talk Radio when I shared it all with you guys.
That's right, when you offered your your hotspot for everybody's use.
Yes.
And we all started updating our Dropboxes and downloading our updates.
In 2 hours, we went through nearly a terabyte of half a terabyte of data. And everyone said, wasn't me.
Wasn't me. Wasn't me. Dum-de-dum-de-dum.
Graham, good evening.
Good evening, Andrew.
How's tricks?
Yeah, going okay.
Yeah. Interesting week this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of television antics.
Ah, yes.
My industry. We'll talk about that during
it's
the show.
Falling down around your ears.
It's down to my toes by now. But anyway, if you're a... Well, the people who listen to this show are probably going, yeah, we knew it was coming. And it's here. It's here. But anyway, we'll tell you all about that later whilst we get our websites together. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where you need to be to talk to us tonight. The squeaky one is not here. The chair has been moved out of the studio. So we should have squeakless things. She's where did she go, Dr. Ryan?
Lena is at GCAP, which the games conference, Asia Pacific.
What do they do there? Play games?
It's a meeting of games developers and important people in the games industry.
Oh, very good.
That's at Jeff's Shed, I think, here in Melbourne.
Oh, very good. Okay, well, yes, we missed Lance. She'll be in next week.
She'll be reporting next week all that's happened at GCAP.
Yes, exciting, I guess. I think the game industry, like a lot of industries, going through turmoil at the moment. I think with some people closing down, others opening up and getting startups and all that. And then, of course, you've got the incumbents that are trying to throw square boxes at round instead of round consoles at you. I'm referring to Sony.
Yes,
who recently came out. They've rejuvenated their console by changing the shape of their box. That's initiative for you, isn't it?
Have we got a PS4 yet?
A what? A PS4?
PlayStation 4.
No.
Is that it's around the corner? When's that? The PS3's been around for a while now.
What did Graham say last week about, I think you used it in the teaser. What does it mean by getting around to it or something like that? It's one of those sort of things where...
Oh, set to. They're set to launch.
That's right.
Yeah, which is meaningless. No.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anything about it being a reality, so...
Rumours next year. Rumours are that in the industry it'll be sometime next year. So,
Somebody asked me things. Someone will know.
Very, very vague. Yeah.
I was being asked today if someone should buy a PS3. I said, well, at the moment, personally, I'd probably wait until it depends how desperate you are.
But it depends.
Wait until there's a PS4 announcement. You could either get that or you could get a very cheap PS3.
I think it depends on what the state of their entertainment system is. Why did they want to buy a PS3? Why did they think it was a good idea?
They're looking at getting it as a Blu-ray player.
Then it's a good thing to do, I would have thought.
I agree.
It's a good Blu-ray player. It has lots of advantages. It can be a media player as well. It'll connect to the network, and it will allow them to play the odd game while they're at it. No, I think it's a good option as a Blu-ray player.
Yep, that's what I use mine for, definitely. Much more so than as a games console.
You know, I only get Blu-rays to see how they made something. I love those. The behind the scenes is what I'm trying to say.
All the extra bits.
All the extra bits. They're the best bits about the Blu-rays.
I'm a big fan, and the same on DVDs when you buy real DVDs. I'm a big fan of the commentary tracks as well.
They're good, aren't they?
I really like listening to those, and people think I'm a geek for listening to them.
Why?
And some people wouldn't dedicate the time to it, but I'm waiting for a comment from my right, but it's not coming.
No, I have no comment to make. Oh, I enjoy watching all the bloopers and the outros. They're always very funny if the producers put them into the disc.
Yeah, value adds. That's one of the reasons why I like a disc. Did you know the life of the DVD, just because we're talking about optical discs at the moment, the theatre release to the DVD, or the time between the theatre release and the DVD... is now 2 to 3 months. It used to be 6 to 12 months.
Right.
The DVD then is used for illegal download, so it becomes on the internet as soon as the DVD or the Blu-ray becomes available.
And quite often well before.
Yes. Then 45 days to is normally the cycle between the DVD and pay-per-view, either here or globally or whenever the movie comes out, whichever market that might happen to be. So that's down from 6 months to 45 days.
Yep.
And the time between pay-per-view and pay, like a cable subscription service, is 6 months. And then it hits free-to-air TV, which is around 12 to 18 months later. Ooh. So, it's interesting.
Do you remember back in the old days that it used to be in the cinemas, and then 12 months later it had come out on VHS?
Take forever, wouldn't it?
And then 12 months later it would be on the television.
Yeah.
And then pay TV came in, and they inserted themselves into that cycle. And there was 12 months where there was not a single new movie on free-to-air TV because there was a delay while the newer ones went to pay TV first before they came to free-to-air TV.
Indeed. Yeah.
I remember that.
It was painful.
Yeah.
I do recall it now that you mention it.
I think free-to-air TV's in for a rude awakening.
It is. We'll talk about that shortly. Should we do a bit of Coro first,
please,
though? Would that be the best bit to start off with?
Let's
try that.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. So you can communicate with the panel.
Or chat now.
Or chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are if you're listening to us live. And come and talk to me and Graham and Andrew. Phoenix, Andy B's there with a funny name, but we know it's Andy.
Oh yeah, I forgot the chat again.
Cisco, Gareth, Marky Mark, you need to log on. Do it now.
Yes.
Our operators are standing by.
Oh no, you just do it. You don't have to operate. Just log in and say good day.
Mod is usually there to...
He is.
Keep he's, things under control.
He's not there at the moment.
He's our operator. Oh, he's not there. Okay.
He'll be sorry. There. Mod's been great over the years.
He has,
he's kept those recalcitrants in line, hasn't he?
GD.
Yeah.
GD. He's our moderator. Kyle, via the contact form, says, as a follow-up to the Apple Store asking him to sign an agreement that he'd pay his account. Remember that last week?
I do.
Yeah. Kyle says, hey guys, just to clarify, yes, I was confused as well. It's a debit account, so they shouldn't have let me out of the store if my account had insufficient funds. Mm. However, I did have the correct amount, but they still asked me to sign to pay the bill. They did swipe my card using an iPhone case, so maybe it's just a security feature on their payment app. Dunno, says Kyle. Cheers, Kyle, says Kyle.
My suspicion is that the store manager is not understanding how the system works and has just made a stupid decision that's meaningless.
Hmm. Yeah, it's odd, because as we said last week, you're not going to walk out of the store with service on the iPhone, are you? You'd be buying it outright and you'd have to go and find yourself a SIM card and an account with a telco somewhere. So you're not locking yourself in, you're buying it outright, aren't you, if you buy it from an Apple store?
Yep. You are. A great expense to the personal back pocket.
Paul, via the contact form, says, hey guys, I'm currently listening to the podcast and your discussion on the Queensland Rail Wi-Fi. It's funny how they claimed to have banned Facebook.
Did they?
I can easily access Facebook via the Queensland Rail Wi-Fi, which features plenty of non-G-rated material. The other restrictions on the free Wi-Fi make me not bother with it, though. I think they're going overkill with the restrictions. Cheers, Paul from Caboolture. In a follow-up email, Paul says, guys, I tried to access an anonymous proxy via the Queensland Rail free Wi-Fi, and I got the following. Warning, access denied. Please note that the content you're trying to access has been deemed by Queensland Rail to violate the terms and conditions of use you agreed to when connecting to Queensland Rail's free Wi-Fi service. Please adhere to the following. And there's a big, long list of stuff that you have to... That is the only type of traffic that's endorsed.
You can't do this, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only web traffic, mail traffic, as if you can't get... As he says, non-G-rated stuff on web and email.
It's nice that they allow SMTP, though, because that'll be very useful to spammers and people sending out bulk emails while they're travelling.
So when it's traced back, the earliest point that you can find it is on a train somewhere.
That's right. Yeah, that's really helpful. Thanks, Queensland Rail.
FTP, VPN, and peer-to-peer traffic will not be transported.
So you can't run your torrent client whilst you're sitting on the laptop on the train.
you can't connect to your office to check your email either for work.
Oh, but who'd want to do that when you're way home?
If you're using a VPN.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Last but not least.
What about Gmail?
Gmail, well, that's web-based, so you're allowed to have
web
traffic.
Oh, but someone might mention a game.
Ooh.
Yeah, Lena said that last week. They didn't want you talking about games.
Okay.
Oh, and it says here in the list, web access is restricted to ensure the following categories of content cannot be accessed, and includes games.
That's so you can't play any games on the way home. You can only, well, you may be able to read your email, depending upon where it's stored.
Mm. Chat. You're not allowed to chat, so our chat room would be banned.
Uh-oh.
Hmm. Interesting. Last but not least, Carl, via the contact form, says, this morning, Wednesday 17th of October, I saw the news that Apple had sent out invitations to an event titled We've Got a Little More to Show You, which everyone assumes is the new iPad mini. While I'm not surprised at this, as I said last week, I did find myself agreeing with Lena on the price problem. Even if the iPad mini has a non-retina screen and limited capabilities, how do Apple make it competitive with other small tablets? For example, the Kindles, the Nexus 7, and so on, around $200 to $250 without eating into iPod Touch sales.
Yeah.
At $329, the 32-gig iPod Touch is a pretty amazing little device. But I think people who buy iPod Touches are those who want to listen to music, watch videos and photos, and play games on a portable device but don't want a phone, whilst kids and teens will probably buy the new Nano. The large iPad is impractical, says Carl, for a lot of this, but a 7-inch iPad would be perfect, and if it's the same price or less than the Touch, it may pose a big pricing problem for Apple.
Well, fragmentation of the market is where it's going to go if this does actually eventuate. And a lot of other markets have gone down this path. And, yes, history probably says that Apple may too, but that's yet to be seen.
Well, we'll know everything. 23rd of October is the event.
Yep.
That they've sent out the invitations for. So we'll know in, that's actually a Tuesday, but we'll know in Melbourne on Wednesday morning.
Is that the day that Windows 8's being launched? It seems very familiar down that part of the world, isn't it? Is it or is it next month?
Windows 8? No, yeah. It's not this week.
Must be
no.
Next month.
Must be next month.
See, yeah. We're all excited about in here. Can you tell?
It's been one of those things at the back of our minds that we've put there.
The one thing with Apple, though, is that whatever the whatever device they do announce, you can be absolutely sure they'll tell us exactly why we need it.
Yes, they'll tell us why we need it, and they'll sell out very, very quickly.
They'll sell out almost straight away, yeah.
They do that very well, and it's, yes. Anyway, that's another story. Just while you're on that, Dr. Ron, Apple's going to stop supplying Java. Did you hear about this?
Well, this has been on the cards for a long time.
Yeah, well, they've finally come across the line. Apple's removing old versions of Oracle's Java software from internet browsers on the computers of its customers when they install the latest update to its Mac operating system. Apple, which has previously included Java with installations of Mac OS X, announced the move on its support website today, or yesterday, actually. It said that customers need to obtain Java directly from Oracle if they want to access web content written for the widely used programming language. Now, how's that going to affect people who buy an Apple traditionally because it just works out of the box? You're going to open up and... Because Java's on everything, literally everything. All the swooshy things you see zip across screens and stuff like that, the images, all that's all Java-based.
In the same way that if you recently got an iOS 6 update, you're probably going to have to go to the site, for example, explicitly and download what it is you need. So
yeah.
Like with iOS 6, if you want to be using Google Maps still, you're going to have to go out of your way to go and download it and install it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, there you go. That's Java and Apple. Thought I'd just throw that into the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all our correspondence,
Okay.
Andrew.
Genius.
Yeah, if you can want to communicate with the panel, you can. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. And thank you to everybody who sent in all the lovely emails, all commiserating and congratulating us on the announcement last week.
Yeah, lots of us.
Yeah, we had lots and lots and lots of emails. We've tried to reply to as many as we can. I'm sorry if we missed any, but keep them all coming, though.
And apologies to those of you who have just discovered us.
It was
really, really tugged on the heartstrings. You got a few emails saying, oh, but I've just found your podcast or I've just found you on the radio. And
look, there's plenty to go back and listen through. They won't be as topical or as current as they would be if you'd heard them when they were produced, but
there you go.
They're all still online.
And if you've missed the news, we've got 7 shows to go, including this one, before the end of Tech Talk Radio for 2012. And for how's the word to say this? There'll be spasmodic little, you know, odds and ends.
Sporadic?
Sporadic podcasts from time to time. So stay tuned, but this will be the last of the regular series this year.
Keep the feed in your iTunes.
Oh, definitely. And keep the tweet in your Twitter client. Tweet in your Twitter client.
We know what you mean.
You know. Yeah. All right. Yes, this is Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Talk Radio.
We have some news too after the break for our last Tech Talk Radio for 2012 and forever. We've got a special night, two special nights actually.
There are two special nights. We'll tell you about it after the break. You put the dates in your diaries.
Yes, for those of you who want to do things with us, and we'd love to have you. But anyway,
we would.
I'd like to talk about television. We've all seen it. We all know what it is, and it's changing. It's a bit like newspapers. Remember the newspapers? They've all gone digital. They become television channels online.
Yeah, well, there's big changes in the... That's right, in print media just in the last 12 months as well, with The Age announcing closures of its printing plants. And
if you go back and listen to our podcast, any of the archive shows online, you would have heard us say that it's going to happen to TV, and it's about to in a big way. We saw during the course of last week Channel 9, the Nine Network. They were to the brink of going into bankruptcy. They could no longer fund their debts. CVC was the owner.
They came very close.
Yes. But unfortunately, what's happened is we've seen a debt for equity swap. So we now have three new owners of Channel 9, a bank, and two, I think they're hedge fund lenders, aren't they, Dr. Ron?
Yep.
They're venture capital-y types, I think. So don't quote me on what they do because I'm interested in tech. But the bottom line is Channel 9 now has new management, and there was a very happy Mr. Gingell coming out of a conference saying, yeah, we've done the deal. We've got rid of all of our debt.
He's the CEO of the Nine Entertainment Group.
Yes, yes. But this is the interesting thing. With every new change of ownership, traditionally management changes too. So I think we're going to see a lot of changes at the Nine Network in their approach to certain things, be it TV shows, the content, which is really what it's all about, salaries and the number of people that work there, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to see changes at that level as well. And then on the other side of the camp, over in Pyrmont in Sydney, the 10 Network has gone from good to bad. We knew that they were on rocky times anyway, but a lot of their audiences moved very much into the online market because they've targeted traditionally the younger generation. And they're calling for, as you said also in the news, Dr. Ron, redundancies.
Voluntary redundancies, 100 they want, yeah, from their, primarily from their newsrooms, but they're going to be looking at each program under the microscope, I suspect, see who's paid what, and where they can cut costs.
Yes.
Because they went from, 10 went from a profit last financial year, like of about $14 million or something, and now they've just posted a nearly $13 million loss in the subsequent financial year.
Well, yes, and this is because in that subsequent year, we had, in 2011, there was growth in the sector. That is, people or audiences watching free-to-air television. Total people in prime time, there was a growth in 2011 of around just over 4% in the market. And in just 12 months alone, that market has shrunk down. It's contracting. It's a bit like our economy in a lot of respects. Thanks,
yeah,
Swanee.
Yep.
It's heading south, and it's actually shrinking. They're losing audience. They're down to actually a shrinkage of 2% of the market in just this year alone from averages, and that is around about 3% of the 16 to 39-year-olds. It's just saying, we just don't want to watch television.
So they're still seeing growth, but it's just the growth is falling.
Well, it depends on where you look at growth. Now, if you look at growth in respect to percentage of media out there, like advertisers, because in commercial television and all that sort of stuff, right across all electronic medias,
yep,
people advertise. Now, if you take that as growth and where all that money's going, if you want to have a look, since 2004 to 2012, newspapers, back then, they had 40% of the total media spend for advertising, 40% of the kettle.
Yep.
Of the pot, should I say. That has now shrunk down to 25% of the pot of total advertising.
Mm.
So that's come down. Free-to-air television started off at around 35% of the total pot,
yep,
of advertising back in 2004. That's down to also 25%, marginally more than newspapers at the moment. So that's on a decline as well. Radio has really maintained its sort of status at around 10% of the total revenue for advertising. So radio's holding its own.
Yep.
Add the new kid on the block into the mix, otherwise known as online. In 2004, online had 5% of the advertising market. This is at the same time that newspapers had 40%. And what we've now seen is that since then to 2012, which is not all that long, just small 8 years,
yeah,
online is now exceeding that of newspapers and free-to-air in the pot. So they're now up around 30% of that disposable advertising money is now going online, more than into newspapers, more than into free-to-air television.
Mm.
And that trend is set to continue. By 2015, that gap will be wider by probably at least another 5%.
So you're talking about the distribution of advertising revenue.
Yeah, it's where commercial TV stations get their money from.
So for the first time, we're seeing more money in advertising being put into online than we are on free-to-air.
Yes, yes.
And that's quite a significant turning point.
Now, next year is expected to be the watershed for the broadcast industry. For the first time, the amount of money spent on advertising over the internet will match and exceed the ad spent on free-to-air television. So we've tipped. Now, Harold Mitchell, who is an incredibly well-known media buyer here in Melbourne, who does a lot of government work and the likes, he said that change is not just coming, it's here and it's coming fast.
Mm.
By 2014, online will overtake TV. 2014 is just a bit over 12
months
away.
Just around the corner.
Which is the greatest change in history of media. So, obviously, if the traditional medias want to keep up with the changes, they've really got to start targeting the traditional, the digital spend, the money that's heading into the online world. So the biggest threat for TV is clearly the internet. And we're starting to see more and more services go online and challenge the roles of traditional TV and electronic media. Now, if you wanted to have a look at the three macros for television, there's these traditional macros. Historically, news, sport, and movies have been what's driven people to watch free-to-air television.
Yep.
Where do you get your news from, Dr. Ron?
I get my news from my mobile phone or my iPad.
Graham?
I haven't watched a news service for years.
Yeah, online, yeah.
Yeah. Sport.
I'm not a sports person, so I don't watch sport on any...
I just looked at media.
Can I just clarify, though? I get a lot of news from radio listening in the car.
Yes.
That is a huge thing for me. And I'm a news junkie. I listen all the time.
We'll come back to that. And yes, you're on the money. That's radio. But yes, so radio and...
And online. And the news aggregators. Yeah, Google and so on.
Yep. And then to movies.
Movies, yeah, physical, going to the cinema and... either downloads or Blu-rays. I don't watch movies on TV.
And the reason is?
Ads.
Correct.
Oh, ads, and I want to choose when I watch.
What you watch, where you want, and the quality of how you watch stuff, too.
And that's, you don't want that's 7 minutes cut from before the end because they've got another program coming up.
No, I don't want them playing the little music before they go to the ad over the last line of the scene.
That's
particularly
it.
If it's a comedy and they blot out the tagline of the joke.
Exactly, yeah.
No.
So that's traditionally where free-to-air television found its niche, in those categories.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to have a look at where it's going to go, they have to devise and create new categories which don't fall into those categories. So they've got to come up with something, and they are, in the form of these horrific things. Well, I say they're horrific. That's my opinion. These real reality TV shows which happen live.
Yeah. I feel like that's almost like a sort of a first blush attempt. It's going to be looked on as a failure, but it's going to be looked on as saying, yeah, okay, and that's how we transition from where we were to where we are. I think that'll be what these reality shows. I mean, Channel 9's picked up Big Brother, and that used to be Channel 10, and it was too tacky for Channel 10, and now Channel 9 have picked it up. So what does that tell you?
What are you saying, Graham? What are you saying?
So, you're right. There is a place for that sort of stuff. And it's content that you're not going to get online.
You can't download it. You can't get get a disc of it.
It's not really news,
and
but
it's
trying to be sort of driven in the same way as news, that you need to sort of get your latest dose of information.
Yes.
It's really hard to see the future, isn't it? But they'll find their niche. They'll find their niche in the sort of programming that can be on when the TV's on in the corner, when you're around the house doing other things, when you're doing the cooking, when you're in the kitchen, when you're, you know.
The attraction to programs like Big Brother is that it's live. It's being broadcast live.
Yeah.
And if you want to watch it first and you want to be the absolute first person to watch it, you will watch it live on the television. It's the same with live sports broadcasts.
Exactly right.
Live sports is a big one. That is the thing that I will watch on TV is the football and the cricket in particular.
And that's starting to move into the online world as well with a subscription without ads, if that's the way you choose to do. But that's also a bit of a story for later on, maybe down the track. So... That's where it's going. We're going to see more on free-to-air. We're going to, unfortunately, see a lot of these network-funded, big, over-the-top shows, the singing shows, the talent shows, the things
they're
that
very
we all,
popular at the moment,
the things
aren't they?
Well,
yeah.
Things that the three of us in here probably cringe about.
Yeah.
but
people get hooked on them.
The market is there for it.
Yeah,
there
that's
are
right.
people out there that crave this sort of stuff. And this is the market where I think free-to-air is going to actually thrive if they go down this, as well as local content. Channel 10, as you were saying there before, Dr. Ron, is looking to cut costs in its news environment. So what that's going to mean to you and me is we are going to see more imported news stories from outside sources, whether it be places like Reuters or the likes. And it's also going to mean that we're going to get very Sydney-centric news in the rest of Australia because it will originate traditionally from Ultimo or Pyrmont. up there in Sydney. So yeah, we're going to see, and you see that now.
That's only going to contribute to its downfall.
I wholeheartedly agree.
In particular in Melbourne, and Melbourne's a particularly strange case for this. I mean, in Adelaide or Perth, they don't care so much if their news comes out of Sydney. Melbourne people get really bent out of shape if someone on the radio says there's a traffic hold-up in the city and you realise they're talking about Sydney, not Melbourne City. So that's a peculiarly Melbourne perspective that we're going to have in here.
I think all other capital cities are like that, especially Perth. You go to Perth, they... pretty much, they feel very... A lot of people feel ostracised from the rest of the country.
From the whole East Coast, yeah.
And that's because the time zone in and of itself is a problem for their business.
They're where the maps have always stopped at the border.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you're right, though. It's going to be the downfall of like trying to cut costs and making it more city-centric. It's just not going to work.
But the other thing is that if the news... I mean, the television newsrooms have been the traditional ones that have been gathering the content that's been on the websites. So if you look at the tie-up between Yahoo and Seven News and MSN and Channel 9 News, that's where they're getting their content from, is the TV stations... Their video content, in particular, there's the TV stations' newsrooms. So... if the news is going to move to online, then where's the news going to come from and how's that going to be funded? Who's going to pay for TV crews to go out and point a TV camera at whatever's going on?
Whether they're employed by the networks or their contractors, it's sort of not a problem.
And this is why I think we're seeing a lot of journos get out there with their iPhones and small little devices like that and do their own thing in the field and come back.
But who's going to pay them?
Well, the traditional journos who would normally write newspaper stories would obviously be funded by their traditional media employer, and maybe they're just going to spread them thin around, but that's where you're going to get your video content on those sort of sites from.
Yeah, what I'm driving to is that the TV stations are winding back their newsrooms because the TV stations aren't profitable anymore. They haven't got the money to spend. All the news is being delivered online for free. Where's the money flow coming to pay for anyone to actually generate news content? Something's got to break somewhere, something's got to change.
And this is why, to get some money back in. In the TV side of things, yes, you're right. But in the online side of stuff, don't you get those ads in the front of all you watch on The Age or the Sydney Morning Herald, and you get an ad thrown at you before you get to watch the insert that comes up? That's their revenue stream at the moment online.
Is that enough to pay for...
Time will tell. I don't know.
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are we going to have to start getting used to having to subscribe to a paid service to get our news on the internet? Are we going to not be able to get all our news content free on the internet anymore?
Well, that's what the big paper boys are looking to do, putting in this firewall. They're trying to get us to subscribe for that model now.
What they call a paywall. Yeah.
So once we go down that path, we will become habitual for that news service for no other reason than you've paid for it. So why are you going to go elsewhere unless someone says, I don't watch them, watch these guys over here. They're much better, they're cheaper, they're better, faster, whatever it might happen to be. And yeah, you'll get a personal recommendation to change.
Mm.
So,
Well, that's going to be the part of the industry that's going to be really interesting to watch because something's got to change and it's not quite clear exactly what's going to happen. I mean, Apple are training us really well to pay, you know, $2.99 here and $5.99 there for apps and things that we find useful.
And movies, and that's the killer.
$1.99 for songs and whatever else it might happen to be. They're training us really well to start paying for things online.
And the TV stations haven't helped the cause there. They've actually pushed people that general direction, haven't they?
Yeah. So, is this world that we've had so far with the internet where all the content's been free? Is that going to start to erode?
Well, potentially. And who's
going to get control of the bank account? Is it going to be iTunes or is it going to be the Google Play Store or Yahoo
or MSN, exactly. 9MSN, or who's it going to be?
Yeah, there's only room for a couple of really big players. Mm. And anyone who's smaller than the couple of biggest ones are just going to get swallowed up.
Going back to what you were saying before, Graham, about radio,
where you get your news from...
Radio's got
a huge advantage over all the other things we've talked about.
Radio,
you can't use the internet in the car. You can't watch television in the car.
You can't do that. But you can certainly listen to internet streamed radio in the car. And
Oh, yes, I do. But you can't click on web on stories on a web browser in the
car. Right,
no,
too right. But the bottom line about this is that it appeals to people because of its availability and its portability. You've got it in your pocket, whether you've got an app on your phone to listen to your favourite radio station, whether that be a news radio station or a music radio station, it's there.
A lot of people like me have got a podcatcher full of podcasts on their smartphone. Yep.
And then you take that and you plug it into your car and you can listen to the output of that device in your car whilst you motor around. So we've got this. The thing which is driving this is the ease and availability and portability of these new gadgets. Now, it is this ease and availability that's wreaking havoc on the traditional business model, is what Harold Mitchell is saying. Because everyone's going, oh, I don't need to watch the news at that time because I'm busy and I've got it in my car, or I've got the radio, or I've got my gadget, and I can listen to what I want to watch, how I want to listen to it, wherever I am. So you've got this new portability sort of thing. So going back a little bit further and talking about television a bit more, Channel 10 had a real-world example of bringing shows from America over to Australia and losing viewers on it because people had already seen it in the US market. Now, I'm referring to the six-time Emmy Award-winning Homeland, which is a massive blockbuster in the US, really, really popular. Now, although 10 fast-tracked the Homeland from its home market, it wasn't enough. The US had just aired Episode 3 in a second season. With the rapid spread of illegal downloading and file sharing of TV shows, hundreds of thousands fewer people were watching the premiere in the second season. Last year, ratings averaged 1 million viewers, and last Sunday, 630,000 tuned in. And that's down considerably because they'd all seen it before.
Yep.
And that's what we're starting to see big time affect a lot of these sort of programs.
How long do you reckon it'll be before the producers of these programs, these currently are produced and funded by the big TV networks in the United States, how long do you reckon it'll be before these programs are a direct subscription to the end users? So we still download it, but we don't download it illegally. We download it by having a subscription just like a podcast.
Yeah, and you'll do the same for the movie houses. You'll do the same,
You sign up for $50 for the season, or whatever it might happen to be,
yep.
And you get the new episode on the minute of release.
Yep, globally.
Yeah, globally. Yes,
and why
exactly.
Wouldn't you do that?
Because you bypass the TV station.
It's in nice high def. There's no watermarks.
Absolutely.
And it's not so full of ads because you've paid for it. You've paid your $50 for it.
Yep.
And that's the key to it. People would be prepared to sit down and watch something without ads in it and pay for it. I would.
Especially the, I mean,
I do.
I get questions from my customers, how can I legally download this sort of content? And I have to say, well, there's no way to legally do it. There's only legally dodgy ways to do it. And, yeah.
iTunes is probably and subscription sort of thing.
Yeah, iTunes is one of the few ways. But, of course, a lot of the content people want isn't there at the moment. But this is going to change.
Mm.
And this is where it has to go. But what TV has to do is to be smart and do what radio did. Radio used to be where you'd get your serials, where you'd get the equivalent of Home and Away, and the equivalent of Homeland would be on the radio. The big blockbuster evening show that you watch would be on the radio. You know, you'd listen to, I don't know, the radio dramas in the evening or whatever it would happen to be. And when TV came out, they thought radio was going to die, but radio didn't die because it stuck to its strengths, news and that music that's constantly on. With the added portability.
In the car.
And you can have the radio on, you know, how many office environments workplace environments, I should say, do you know where the radio isn't constantly on?
All right. Another benefit to the online world is accurate metrics. That is, you can report back to people the exact number of people, the exact habits, what they're doing online. Every click is
measurable.
What
they clicked on, what they're interested in,
Whereas at the moment, the television metrics are only from a very, very small
sample number. Oztam, which is the Australian company that measures television ratings, bases its data on just 3,135 households in a metropolitan market, plus 1,400 for pay television. Now, as a sample of the Australian population, that ain't much. And that's how they come up with their TV ratings.
It's not much. And I wonder if they you know, how they determine who is going to be, you know, a valuable contributor to that number. Like, if they gave one of the devices to me to plug on a television, the TV wouldn't be turned on. You know, wouldn't get anything at all for a month.
Yeah, but because you're randomly chosen as part of a sample size that's sufficiently big enough, then that you represent that proportion of people that do behave that way.
But do they pick people randomly?
Yeah.
Like, because I would, well, people like me would say, no, I don't want to be involved. There's no point.
But you should
Oz Town aren't going to come to me and say, well,
you need to represent people who behave the way you do.
But I can't believe they do, is what I'm saying. They wouldn't come to me and say...
You don't believe that other people do what you do?
I don't believe that other people do what I do who are part of the OzTam focus group.
Hmm.
They wouldn't, you know, they'd be saying, what's wrong? What, is there a technical fault? Why haven't we got any data from you this month?
I know.
They wouldn't want the device.
The OzTam box that sits in your house rings on a 1-800 number every night at about 3 in the morning and downloads its data. So they'll know that it's talking. They'll just know you're not watching telly.
Yeah. But I'm not going to be the sort of person they would want, though.
Well, it depends. Commercial television wouldn't want you because you're going to be bad for the stats. But then again, if you're going to be part of the general consensus of television viewing, then they want you because you're part of it.
They need to know that people are behaving the way you're behaving, and people are. So, statistics is an interesting area. You often look at these small sample sizes and wonder, is this really big enough to be representative? But there are mathematicians and statisticians who will be able to explain that, yes, that sample size is chosen for a reason because it is big enough to be representative.
All right, the tipping switch for a lot of this technology is the changing from analog to digital TV because we're getting smart TVs with apps built into them now. Plug them into your internet and connect them all up and away you go.
Yes.
The other benefit to that is...
Even that $60-something Blu-ray player I bought the other day has got an Ethernet port on the back and does a really good job. I watched quite a lot of content on it just to try it out.
Yep. Now, we're seeing connectivity coming along. What's the best thing Australia's got from a high-speed connectivity point of view is the national broadband network. Now, in this scenario, Australia's proposed national broadband network becomes a game-changer full-time, and it's been described as a nuclear event when it comes to media online. So that's the catastrophe that it's going to cause online. Well, you know who to thank for that. Delivering broadcast-grade internet services to Australian homes and the ability to bring in high-definition
data. That's an interesting choice of words, broadcast grade internet services. That's an interesting phrase, isn't it?
So, yes, here we go.
Yeah.
The roundabout, the slippery slide is happening, and it's going to happen real quick. Now,
it's really fascinating to watch this happening around us. This happened to radio, as I said before, in the last century, and we're going to watch this happen to television.
I want to give you two real-world examples of what's happening right now. The first one is NBA.com. This is sport.
Yeah, this is American basketball. This is
American basketball.
Yeah.
You can now only watch it on their website. You have to subscribe to NBA.com and you get the real stream, real time.
When you say subscribe, you mean actually pay the money to access it, not just
you don't get
log
ads.
On and register.
You don't get ads. You buy a season or you buy a game or whatever you want to buy.
Oh, more strength to your arm, NBA. That's fantastic.
Can I tell you, this is the model that the AFL is looking at. They have built...
This is the model the AFL need to look at.
They are. They've built it. It's sitting underneath the Docklands Arena, and it will happen in the next little bit. They're just, I reckon, just hedging their bets for NBN Co. to just get out there a little bit further. So there's your sporting model. Now, in the drama and in the fact that consumers are now going to start seeing brand-funded media online... The example here is in Target in the United States, where fallingforyou.target.com is Target's online portal for a soap.
Fallingforyou.target.com.
Yes. Now, here you can see a soap, which is really well produced, nothing to do with Target, but they're getting you into the habit to go to their website to watch television.
Isn't it just a long ad? Isn't it just
each
episode
a soap.
Is a 5-minute ad? And yeah, but it's a soap where, you know, the script reads that, you know, let me find it again.
While you find it,
close up on the docking station as she sets her iPhone in it and presses play. Quiet piano music begins to fill the room. Welcome. Amanda turns and stands in front of Joe
Welcome to the world of product placement.
Exactly right.
And this is where brand-funded television was until people stopped watching television. They've moved online. So as a result, brand-funded has moved online with the added advantages to the brand that their brand is not diluted amongst other brands. And they're becoming a place where people will go to habitually watch a television show or a series. So this is the new habit-forming technology that we've got. So there's two real-world examples of what's happening now. And a message to the broadcasters in this country, because they're talking about streaming at the moment, they've got to lift their technical game. We need high-definition streaming. There's no reason why iView can't be high-definition, is there?
No reason whatsoever. It's on the internet. We're not talking about bandwidth restrictions on like digital television.
Correct. When I can sit at home and watch BBC HD streamed to my big Bravia from the other side of the planet.
And is it real HD from the BBC?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's good.
Absolutely. You got to wonder why it's not being done
locally. To get really good quality high definition does take an awful lot of bandwidth.
It does. But bandwidth is becoming cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And if you're in a free view, like you do on some of those ISPs that offer unmetered services, because they'll become part of the package, look at what iiNet does with its Fetch TV and all that, and Telstra does with its Big Pond TV, all that's unmetered. Even, I think you discovered too, that the football on the Telstra network is unmetered,
isn't it? Yeah,
that's
right, yes, yes.
So we're seeing ISP-funded channeling. Oh, you come over, you can watch whatever you like with a subscription and we won't ping you for the bandwidth.
Or if you're a iiNet subscriber, for example, and you'll have free access to this will be in our free zone.
Exactly.
We won't meter you for this.
Exactly. Anyway, I think we've spoken about it infinitum enough. There's half an hour of television. If you're listening to the podcast, that was probably 10 minutes of television.
On radio.
On radio. Yeah. That was amazing, isn't it? So if you've got anything to add to us, come along and have your say. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We'll be interested on your thoughts of that, because it's a changing space, really big, quick time changer. All right, we'll take a break. What are we going to announce when we come back, Dr. Ron?
We've got an announcement with some diary dates.
Diary dates?
So you know what's happening at the end of the year.
Excellent.
And everybody else knows what's happening.
All right, hang around. We'll be back with that in just a tick.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Confirmed new iPad mini to debut in October.
That sounds a bit winfo.
Yes, this is good news.
You shouldn't be able to patent things that are either obvious or natural progressions from things that already exist.
Maybe it can loop through.
The red is Office, the green is Xbox.
It's going to make life harder rather than easier.
Well, now you've railroaded me.
Sorry.
On its face.
Whoa.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron, you don't like Message Bank, do you?
I don't like Message Bank at all. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. And you tried to have
it... who's worked in the in the voicemail and IVR industry for about 15 years.
You tried to have it removed off a service the other day here you've actually got a little less hair than since I last time I spoke to you.
Yeah,
it's moved down from your head onto your face.
I do. Telstra and all the other carriers, they make it very, very difficult for you to undivert your phone. When you get your phone service initially from them, everything will be set up to divert through to Message Bank or voicemail, whatever the product is that the particular telco calls it. And that's because they're trying as hard as they can to convert missed calls into revenue. They don't want people to hear busy tone if you're on the phone. It doesn't generate any revenue for them. They want you to leave a message.
Yeah, they want you to connect.
And then they can ping you for retrieving the message. They can ping the caller for actually leaving a message. And they can ping you for actually returning the calls. So they win on three fronts. So if you go into this new phone, which I've got, and you try and undivert call forward on busy, for example, because I just want my callers to hear busy tone if I'm on the phone, and they can hang up and ring back, you know, a few minutes later.
I remember those days. That was great. Oh, he's on the phone. I'll ring him back shortly.
I'll just ring him back shortly.
Yeah.
You can't do that. They've turned off in the network the ability to cancel call forward on busy. So you can't switch it off. You can try dialing what are called the MMI codes or the #, whatever, and you just get a message back from the phone handset saying, I'm sorry, your network doesn't support this code. You cannot disable call forward on busy. You can change it to something else, but you can't get rid of it completely. So I changed mine from the voicemail product Message Bank to the voice to text service.
as an interim measure.
Oh, you got that far, did you?
I got that far. But then I rang up Telstra on 125111 and said, I want this removed, please. And they said, yep, no worries, we have to do it. Tap, 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 it'll be done. Just turn your phone off and on again. Why you have to do
how
that?
Long
I don't
ago
know. It's a network feature.
Yeah. How long ago did you do this?
Oh, about 5 days ago.
And no. What happens if I ring you now?
Oh, if I'm busy on the phone, it'll go through to message bank or voice to text. So I'll have to ring them again and hassle them, but they just make it so difficult. It drives you crazy.
Nice. Oh, well, that's telcos for you. They're trying to get every shekel out of you.
Their data usage web page is balked too, by the way.
Which
I've had some interesting discussions with people about.
Telstra were doing massive updates on their website on the weekend.
Well, they were, and I could accept an outage like for an hour or a few hours or a day if you know about it, but like 5 days down the track, I've just tried to access my usage stats on my mobile phone. It says, we're sorry, an error has occurred, please try again later. It's very frustrating.
Didn't the ACCC try to keep them in line of having these usage pages available?
They did try, Graham.
Failed.
Yeah.
Completely.
They might get a fine from them for $50,000 and they'll go, oh, yeah, no worries.
Yep, no, we've made that up already in the excess usage charges because people can't check their usage.
It's half an hour's worth of diversions to Ron's mobile message.
Drives you crazy. Telstra, come on, Lyft, please.
It's very frustrating. Anyway, more of that to come.
Yeah, I don't like these new plans of theirs either with the reduced data usage. I've been having trouble with my phone over the weekend.
Yeah,
and you said I'd just go down the Telstra shop and get a new phone because you've just got your new One XL.
That's it.
And I had a look, and if I do, I'll get shuffled onto one of these new plans and I'll lose half my data.
And then buy it outright.
This is.
Well, tell you what I've been doing. I'm actually using my dongle, my mobile broadband Wi-Fi hotspot, a lot more. And if I run close to the wire. I use that because I'm really using my phone only
because what I really want is to have to carry around yet another device. Yeah,
I know. But I'm really using my phone only for like tethering if all else fails. But because I'm not a big consumer of on-the-go data, but as we've just been discussing, that might change in the next little bit, and maybe this is where the telcos are starting to gear up for all this wonderful new, especially with 4G. Dr. Ron, you're on 4G. How quickly do you go through your data?
Well, I'm using the same amount of data
that I always use.
I don't know because I can't see the usage stats. Look, I'm using the phone in the same way as I use my old phone. My usage habits haven't changed. So I don't believe I'm using any more data than I used to be. But when I could see that page, it told me that I'd used my full allotment of data in a few days. It said, you've used 2.5 gigabytes in the last few days and you're now on pay-as-you-go for data. And then on the same web page, it had a little bar graph below that, which explained this is your daily usage. So for the 5 or 6 days since the plan had actually started, I'd used 20 megabytes on one day, 50 megabytes on another, and then 100 kilobytes on another day. So it added up to about, 100 megabytes or something in a few days. Certainly not 2.5 gigabytes. It's just the whole usage stats thing is just completely balked.
Yeah.
It just does not work.
Yeah.
Which is why I've got installed the 3G Watchdog application on the Android device.
How close do you think that is to your
Certainly
spend?
A lot closer than the Telstra one. Yeah.
All right.
That was always very, very, very close when the stats worked.
Mm.
So on the old plan, which was just a personal plan, not a business one, and the usage stats page worked, if you compared that with the 3G Watchdog application, they were very, very close, within a couple of hundred kilobytes.
That's good. Peace of mind. But you have to run in parallel for a while to get a feel for them both.
Exactly.
All right. We have our interview show coming up on December the what? The 3rd, isn't it?
3rd of December. Monday the 3rd of December.
Monday of December.
It'll be the last Tech Talk for 2012 and the last Tech Talk for a long, long time.
Yeah, no summer series. We're having holidays for the first time in 8 years, aren't we all, boys?
Exactly right.
Looking forward to it too.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Are you going to tell us what's going to happen on that Monday?
I can if you'd like me to. Yeah.
What's going to happen on Monday? We'll leave that pregnant pause there. That's
I was just in a happy space. I was thinking about what I was going to do with all that extra time. And
you've moved on already, haven't you?
I had ukulele music and palm trees and lying on a beach somewhere. It was great. There we go again. Ah, okay. Back to it, Dr. Rom. Monday the 3rd of December. Box Hill Town Hall.
Oh, that's here.
In Melbourne's leafy eastern suburbs from 7 p.m. Everybody's invited. If you'd like to come along and you'd like to watch the last Tech Talk Radio go to air.
Come in here to the studio where we are right now in the green room.
It's not actually in the town hall. It's in the community hub down behind the town hall.
It's the part of the town hall buildings. It's behind the town hall
You can park either on the side or at the front or at the back. There's lots of car parking. Family friendly. Tea and coffee will be available. You can watch the final Tech Talk go live to air from Studio One at 3WBC.
Limited numbers. Book now.
Yeah, yeah. You need to book. You need to let us know you're coming because
the further you are away from where we are, the more guarantee you will have of getting in.
Absolutely. We've got this events page. We've got another events page as well, which I'll explain shortly.
Two events.
Yeah, two events. TechTalkRadio.eventzilla.net. If you go to the TechTalkRadio.eventzilla.net page, you can register there, and you need to register. And after a certain number of registrations, the event will close because we can't, well, as much as we'd like to have 1,500 people here, we can't actually physically fit them all in. After Monday the 3rd, oh.
What is it? TikTokRadio.who?
TikTokRadio.eventzilla.net.
.net.
Yeah, and we'll put links to these registration pages in the show notes and on the email newsletter. So it's very important that you subscribe to the email newsletter.
Now, Lena's going to do something for us on the night, isn't she?
Lena will be here.
Yeah.
You'll be here. I'll be here. Graham will be here. Adam Turner will be here.
Lena will be here and some.
Really?
With her bub. It'll be her last outing, really, before it all happens for her.
It'll be
her
last big social occasion.
She'll be big.
That's right. On Tuesday, the 4th of December, which is the next day, dinner and Christmas drinks with the panel. If you can't make it on the Monday night and you'd like to catch up for a meal and Christmas drinks, we're going to be at the Mitcham Hotel in Mitcham, also in Melbourne's leafy eastern suburbs, so you can chat to the panelists, mingle, enjoy a responsible Christmas bevy.
Can you tell that URL for Andy B?
He
was in the loo or something like that. Oh, I think at the time he read it out. So
I know what he's
go
like.
Go slowly so that he can type as you type.
Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Dot Eventzilla. EventZilla.
Oh, Graham's put it in there for him.
.net.
There you go.
If you'd like to register to come to the Christmas drinks and dinner with the panel on the Tuesday night.
Oh, what?
Tech Talk Social.
So the very next night.
The very next night.
As if you can't get enough of us.
TechTalkSocial.eventzilla.net. I'll be there.
Okay.
You going?
I guess.
You better register.
Okay.
So two links for you for two events. Monday night's our last Tech Talk. Come and see the panel. Come and see the show go live to air. The Tuesday night, Tuesday the 4th of December, we'll be up at the Mitcham Hotel.
That'd be fun.
If you'd like to join us for dinner and Christmas drinks.
Or is it the Yay Hotel on the weekend? That's a nice pub too.
Up in Yay. The bush. Yeah, we won't be driving that far.
You know how we had a discussion on this program about what people are called in Perth?
Oh, Perthverts.
Perthlings. Well,
guess what they're called in Yay?
Yeah, no.
Yalians.
Yalians. Oh, I did not see that coming. Yalians. Yeah. That's very good.
Yes. It was on a bumper sticker driving around the town. I thought that's very appropriate, really, isn't it?
I'm Yalian and I'm proud. Yalian.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You'll miss this, won't you all, everybody out there? Oh, dear. Well, we've been in your ears.
Heavily scripted and well-rehearsed.
Oh, too right.
Yes, diatribe.
We've been at this for 8 years now. You reckon we'd get it right by then. Anyway, speaking of getting it right, there's a bitter and twisted person on the panel who's not on the panel at the moment, and I'm not referring to her ladiness.
Not referring to Lena?
No.
Who are you referring to?
Adam.
Adam Turner, respected Australian technology journalist.
Yeah, and it's quite good, actually, because she's not here, because she normally bleats in our ears when Adam's segment goes to air.
Lena
yeah.
sometimes gets vocal when Adam's
Yeah, and we have the microphones down so the listeners can't hear what goes on, but it's very funny.
You might hear it if you come in on Monday the 3rd of December. You'll hear her through the soundproof glass.
And we're not having a go at the soundproof glass. It's very soundproof. So, anyway, Adam Turner has been part of this show for more years than I can remember. A lot of folders on the hard drive anyway. And he's done a view from the couch.
Excellent.
Which has been just sensational. Some have been controversial, some have been comical, and some have been the vent, getting it off his chest, the soapbox. Tonight is no different. It's one of those. It's a soapbox one. And how should we say? He bought a new laptop recently, had a few little issues with it. So let's join him, shall we, in the car. Parked illegally somewhere in the city.
Oh, was he?
Doing his... Well, that's what you do as a journalist. Well, he can tell the story. Here it is.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
This week's View from the Couch is brought to you from my car in the middle of the night as I sit here doing LTE testing and battery testing on the new Samsung Galaxy S4G. Yes, it's a very glamorous life as a technology reviewer. One of these nights the cops are going to pull me over and I'm going to have a lot of fun explaining what I'm doing with a carload of tech sitting in a strange suburb outside somebody's house taking notes. Anyway, talk of battery life and battery testing and stuff like that brings me to one of my pet hates, and that is overly aggressive power saving features. It's just got out of control because the vendors are just obsessed with bragging about battery life rights, even if they cripple the product in the process. They don't care how unusable they make it, as long as they can put a nice fat number next to how many hours it keeps running. Classic example, the little HP Pavilion notebook that I bought a little while ago to take to New York. I love this thing. It's small, it's light, it's cheap, it's relatively powerful, it's got a great battery life. I can squeeze 6 hours out of it easily. The one thing that's been bugging me ever since I bought it is every now and then the screen flickers, the brightness just flickers for no good reason. Just when I'm moving the mouse around the screen, something goes, whoa, I need to be really bright. It's annoying, but I'm often in the middle of getting some work done, so I don't have time to deal with it. Now, eventually, I got jack of it, so I did what you do when you have a problem like this. I went through all the settings, couldn't figure out a way to turn it off, so I figured maybe there was something wrong with the notebook, thought I'd do a Google search. Lots of other people are having the same problem with this notebook. The brightness just goes on and off for no good reason. Been through all the settings, couldn't find anything, reinstalled Windows, didn't fix it, took it back to the shop and got a new one under warranty, didn't solve the problem. Now, like I said, it was behaving for all the world like it had some aggressive power saving feature turned on, but I've been through all the settings, all the Windows settings, all the HP bloatware, couldn't find anything. Now, once I dug a bit further through the forums, I came across what the problem is. Hidden in a different menu, in the graphics card menu, is something called VeraBrite. Straight away, sounds like a stupid product name, you know it's going to be a stupid feature. VeraBrite is something from AMD, which alters the brightness on the fly. Now, it's supposed to do it according to what's on the screen and gradually change the picture so as to, you know, stretch out to battery life. But every now and then it goes, whoa, and just jumps. Now, this is driving a lot of people crazy. Even HP must realize this because they've actually got instruction on their website on how to adjust the sensitivity or just kill it completely. If you run into this problem, you'll find it's buried away in the PowerPlay settings in the ATI Catalyst Control Center, which might be called the AMD Vision Engine Control, depending on what kind of computer you've got. Now, you really have to wonder what kind of genius at AMD thought this feature was a good idea and what kind of genius at HP thought it was a good idea to enable it and leave it set to the maximum setting by default, even though it was going to create plenty of problems for users and even generate unnecessary warranty claims. I'd say it even jeopardized sales because several reviews I read of this little notebook pointed out the disappointing screen brightness as one of the few flaws. It's quite possible that reviewers overlooked this hidden power saving feature and therefore marked it down because AMD and HP have turned on this stupid, annoying feature. I can tell you exactly what kind of genius did this. The one who only cares about battery life bragging rights. Even though it actually doesn't make that much of a difference to the battery life. It's not just HP and AMD playing this game. It's lots of vendors. Samsung's phones are appalling. When I reviewed the Samsung Galaxy S3, I had to override 5 power saving settings before I could access the picture quality of the web browser. The web browser has its own aggressive screen brightness settings, apart from the overall settings, which make it unusable outdoors by default. But that doesn't seem to matter to the power management team because they're just obsessed with bragging about battery life. No concern at all for usability or driving their customers crazy. Now, I appreciate that sacrifices need to be made, but surely you need to draw the line somewhere. Crippling your products to squeeze a few extra minutes out of the battery is not really a recipe for success.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm going to miss that segment of the show each and every week. Adam in a car somewhere in the streets of Melbourne doing field tests with mobile phones, breathing heavily, fogging up the car.
Getting it off his chest. Yeah, that's what he does.
On our Monday night thing, are you going to head out into the audience with a radio mic too and get these listeners on the wireless, Dr.
Maybe, Ron? Maybe.
Yeah, if they're good.
If they're good.
Yeah. Oh, good. So you go. You might come along on Monday night and get yourself on the radio too. That'd be fun.
This is Monday the 3rd of December.
Correct.
go to the website and sign up.
Yeah.
You want to attend, and we want you to attend.
Yeah.
Andy There's B's. No cost. Just because you have to sign up doesn't mean we're going to charge you.
Yeah, it's absolutely free. I should have mentioned that.
That's very important.
Mm. We just need to know for numbers. That's the important
thing. That's
why
we're finishing.
There's some discussion on the on whether alcohol free means the alcohol is free.
Ah, no, it's the first event will be alcohol free. Because it's
But the Christmas drinks on the Tuesday night will be alcohol full.
Yeah. Yeah, no alcohol near the radio station.
Indeed.
Yeah, indeed. All right, other things happen during the course of the week. We should gloss over them flippantly. One thing which I caught my eye, which I thought was really, really cool. And I don't know whether you guys have seen it yet. Google has released some videos inside one of their data centers.
Saw that one.
Oh.
Using the Street View technology.
Using the Street View technology, they've done a bit of a zippy-doo-doo-da through the...
What'd they do?
A zippy-doo-da through the local Ohio data center.
How do I see it?
You go to techtalkradio.com.au.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. It's on the left-hand side about halfway down. And you'll see an embedded YouTube clip there of the Google people zipping through their data center. Now, you have never seen a server room like it. There's even a stormtrooper on guard. Did you see the stormtrooper?
Didn't see the stormtrooper. From Star Wars?
That's the one.
Oh.
Go and have a look at the stormtrooper. He's there in the server room. So that was something I thought was really quite interesting. Because Google's normally hidden behind this veil of... mystery and secrecy.
And secrecy, yeah, it is, yeah.
And
yeah.
This is good. Graham's obviously going to... You won't hear from Graham for a few minutes now.
No, I'm watching it, yeah.
They can see a bandwidth in the studio.
Oh, dear. All right, in other news, Australia's still lagging in broadband speeds. This is according to a recent survey of the... who's the mob? I can't think of the name of them now. Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. They do it each and every... The ACAMI. ACAMI? ACAMI, however you like to pronounce that. ACAMI. State of the Internet Report. Anyway... Australia has recorded, on average, broadband speeds of around about 4.4 megabits per second for the third quarter of 2012, exceeding the global average by about 1.4 megabits per second. Despite a 24% increase in the average Australian broadband speed over the quarter, Australia ranked 39th out of 242 countries, after South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong and Singapore in the Asia-Pacific region.
Hmm.
Now, there was a little footnote on the report, which I thought was quite cute. The footnote read, the report authors pinned the increase on 35-minute internet outage in February that brought down the previous quarter's average Australian broadband speed to 3.5 megabits per second.
Ooh.
Now.
So an outage has actually affected the average speed.
Do you remember the outage?
Was this a big pond? Telstra Big Pond?
Yeah, it's close. It's when Dodo plugged a router in there and took out most of the eastern seaboard.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that was an enormous outage, and that did have a big impact on...
had a really big impact on our...
An enormous number of users.
Yeah. So
it wasn't just a little one, isolated incident. It was enormous at the time.
Yeah. Now, you all want to know who won. South Korea.
Yep.
Average speed, 14.2 meg, while the African state of... Now, you know how I can't pronounce things. This is one.
Just a state in Africa.
A state in Africa. Yeah, they got the wooden spoon.
Right.
Average speed of 0.4 megabits per second. And this represented a 29% drop on the previous quarter.
400 kilobits per second average.
Yeah, that's about dial-up, but less than dial-up, really, isn't it?
No.
56K.4. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you do the maths. Mobile connectivity. Russia came out ahead.
Did it.
Russians are doing well. average speed, 7.7 megabits per second, while Australian networks were again averaging around 1.9 megabits per second.
Be good to look at that report in another 12 months.
It'll up the ante once the 4G rolls out a bit, won't it?
See where Australia fares with its new 4G LTE networks.
Hacking and attacks. The report took into account attack traffic emanating from 188 countries, on increase from 182 countries the previous quarter. And, okay, who do you reckon the most attacks came from?
From?
Yeah, which country originated the most attacks?
China.
Correct. There you go. See, that's why we can go home now. You know these things. So, yeah. Anyway, there's the
They should have just asked me instead of writing their expensive report.
They could have. In other news, Facebook asked to close Undercover Cop page. Did you see this on the news during the course of the week?
Yeah, I did.
Yep. Some doofus has put up on Facebook all things relevant about undercover policing and photographs of said vehicles.
We're publishing registration numbers.
Why?
Yeah, good question. Why?
But anyway, it's not about that. It's about the fact that Facebook would now have to be approached, and they probably won't take the page down because they don't take any pages down, do they?
They do sometimes.
They do if they contravene their own ridiculous terms and conditions. Like if there's a photograph of a mother breastfeeding, then the image will be removed because they think it's pornographic. But if you have a page there with police car registration numbers,
things
they say,
that can
jeopardise law enforcement or police safety. They say, oh, no, no, we've got, you know, special amendment rights that protect free speech, and that has to stay.
Well, Victoria Police has complained to Facebook, as you would expect. The page has more than 12,500 followers and a dozen photos and comments revealing all said information, which we discussed. So, yeah, that's one of the downsides, I think, of social networking.
Facebook say that they cooperate with law enforcement, but they are...
still there, I bet.
Yeah, that's right. They are notoriously bad at cooperating with law enforcement agencies.
Google will be holding an Android event on October the 29th in New York City. Because they can, I guess.
An event? What an type event. Of event?
Well, you know, Apple have events. It's Google's turn now. They don't want to be left in the backwater, so they're going to have an event.
An Android Mini.
Are they saying what they're doing at this event? Are they launching something? Are they announcing something?
Well, they sent invitations out for an Android event schedule for the 29th in New York, and it's widely speculated that they're going to announce the new Nexus smartphones. What did you get, Dr. Ron? You didn't get any one of those, did you?
No. No, I got an HTC
One X.
One XL.
There you go. XL. Is it an XL because it's big?
It is. It is. It is very big. It's quite big.
Knock yourself out type big.
Might be too big for some people, but it's good. I like it. It still fits in my back pocket.
Very good. Earlier reports have suggested that Google is planning to release Nexus-branded smartphones from a variety of manufacturers, including LG and Sony. The invitation's obviously going to give details about all those sorts of things, so that's coming up at the end of the month. Microsoft is going to cut the Xbox 360 price by $50. You were talking about games consoles earlier on, weren't you?
Yeah, wonder what they've got around the
corner. New holiday bundles coming up. Anyway, they're trying to just move stock, I guess. Maybe the 720 is going to come out. Oh, there you go. Rumor, speculation, scuttlebutt aplenty. Anyway, Microsoft's giving customers two more reasons to buy an Xbox 360. First, all Xbox consoles, except the standard 4 gig model without the Kinect, and you'll receive $50 price cut on it. I don't know whether that's going to apply here in Australia. This could be just a global thing.
What's the source of that? Where was that?
That's come from BGR.
Okay.
In the States. So I'm sure it'll reflect locally. But then again, I've been wrong before.
We do have the Australia tax here.
We do indeed. But there might be some discount or some subsidy there as well. So, and then they'll bundle it up with games and do all those sorts of things. But obviously try and drum up a bit more in the sales department there. Now, the Pirate Bay has gone cloud-based.
Yeah, I heard about this. This is quite funny, really.
Isn't it?
They've decided that it's more economical and more efficient for them to put Pirate Bay up in the cloud somewhere.
Pirate Bay has been traditionally known for having all sorts of files, such as torrent files, which use a BitTorrent client to download, and then it goes and does its business and downloads content, whether it be good stuff or not so good stuff, legal or not so good legal.
Just in the interest of accuracy, Torrent Bay haven't run BitTorrent trackers or even hosted BitTorrent files for quite some time. At the moment, they host ways for you to find the one you want without actually hosting it.
Is that because they went through the courts and got
hauled off the coals? There's a few reasons,
Anyway, they've moved their headquarters into the cloud for no other reason than it makes them, well, they say it's better and more secure and yada yada, but realistically, the main reason is because they can't be easily or as easily tracked down and been made accountable, I guess, as they have in previous times. So, Pirate Bay going to the cloud. What next, Dr. Ron?
Pirate Bay in the cloud. There you go.
Maybe they'll go on the seven seas. They'll be out in the ocean shortly. Be like the Goodies Pirate Radio Station. That was great. I love that show.
From a boat in the ocean somewhere.
Yeah, they only have one song, A Walk in the Black Forest.
That's right.
Yeah. Google resists 2/3 of Australian takedown requests. How about this? The Australian government requested to remove content from its massive online archive. That's Google's online archive. The most recent Google transparency report has said that, you know, the Aussie government's really asking them to do stuff, take down stuff. According to the report, Google received 17 content removal requests from the Australian government covering 646 individual items. Google compiled and complied with 35% of the requests, ignoring the remaining 65%. Wonder what they were.
And the government is who?
The Australian government.
Yeah, is it comprised of law enforcement, or does it say that which departments in the government?
No. Mm. Germany and the United States took the lead in takedown requests for the last half of 2011 with 1,034 and 3,851 items, respectively. But
Google search results?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. Things have been indexed that the government doesn't
I suspect
want
so.
Indexed.
I suspect so. And whilst on the subject of
this is
things,
why Conroy needs his filter.
Well, the ACMA's internet content refusal... Oh, sorry, the internet... Let me start again. ACMA's internet content referrals to classification board. It spiked during the course of the year. This is ACMA. You know how when you complain to ACMA,
yep.
They then refer it on to the appropriate bodies, or they then take action.
Yeah.
In respect to whether or not it's decency related or nasty, you know, like all those bad things that you hear about in the news recently with children and stuff like that.
Mm.
A lot of stuff gets referred on to the classifications board, and figures from ACMA's report show that 469 items of online content were referred to the classification board for a decision to say, yeah, no, leave that there, or no, that's got to come down. And anyway, we're not quite sure what the spike is for. ACMA won't go in and say in detail what is causing that increased incidents, I guess, in referrals to them. But suffice to say that most Australians have actually done the right thing, and if they've had a takedown notice, they've taken it down. But the other issue is, of course, sites that are offshore, and they can't do much about that apart from refer it to the appropriate authorities in those countries.
Well, that's right.
And that leads on to your blacklist question, because there is voluntary filtering at the moment on a lot of ISPs, and that information gets passed on to them too, and it gets filtered.
Mm. If you're a Telstra Big Pond customer and you get the internet off a big black cable that comes into your house, then that is being filtered. Telstra Big Pond is actively filtering your internet traffic.
Adding to that, ACMA also ruled that 329 complaints it received in the past financial year had invalid or were invalid because they didn't have all the information associated with them. So if you're going to lodge a complaint, make sure you're
prepared.
Yeah, do all the right things that you should do in the first place. Foxconn have been accused of using underaged labour to build iPhone 5s.
Yes, I was about to say
Foxconn are a Chinese manufacturer of technology, is that right?
Pretty much. Yep. In fact, they build the majority, I think, or assemble most of the Apple range
products,
of goodies that comes out. And
not just Apple products, all sorts of bits and pieces.
Yep.
Yeah. A report by China Labour Watch noted that schools sent interns to Foxconn, but the Taiwanese manufacturer did not check their identities or their ages. The legal working age in China is 16, and Foxconn has confirmed that the children as young as 14 have been working in its facilities. So, yeah, but if, yes, children working.
But they would have thousands of people working,
they would.
Wouldn't they?
They would. Twitter, you know them, don't you?
I know Twitter.
Twitter. They've finally done some censoring whilst we're on the subject of all these sorts of things.
I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter.
Really?
At the moment, yeah.
Why? What?
For a number of reasons.
What's got you goat with the short messaging service?
Sponsored tweets.
Oh, why? Are you getting some?
I'm getting lots. Their contempt that they show for developers.
Yes, they've closed off a few portals, of which was...
They're not making friends at the moment.
It's reflected in our website too, have you noticed?
No, I haven't, no.
Well, the Twitter feeds have disappeared on our website.
Oh, that would explain a fault that I was looking at during the week that I put in the too hard basket. Yeah, you might have just solved that one for me, Andrew.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, that will be what it is. Yeah, third-party plug-in.
Yep.
In a... Yes, at a website that has suddenly stopped working, and I said, I'll get back to that. That's a bit odd. I don't know why that suddenly stopped working.
Yeah, well, it's not your website.
It will be the API.
Twitter, yeah, correct.
Migrated across to app.net.
I'll have to.
Yep.
Oh, now you've opened up a can of worms. Dr. Ron, I know I've seen emails from you. Would you like to talk about this now or not?
Let's talk about it at the end of the program.
Okay, we will indeed.
Okay.
Back to Twitter. Microblogging site Twitter has exercised its country-specific content blocking tool for the first time to remove access to neo-Nazi groups' account in Germany. See? They've had to do things.
But they've only blocked it in Germany, so in other places you can see this group.
Well, I think they've blocked their account, which means they can't tweet.
You said it was country specific.
Yes. According to the move on Twitter, the company's general legal counsel said that we announced the ability to withhold content back in January. So, I'm assuming that they're blocking their tweets, and I assume that would be into the global timeline. So, anyway, Twitter has fought.
What's the country specific part? That's what I'm.
Good question. Country specific, maybe tweets from a country. Twitter has fought to avoid censorship, and it said it's never really wanted to withhold content unless it's had a really good reason to do so. Nazi organizations and related material to promote them are criminal in Germany. So maybe that's the motivation behind it.
Yeah, that's right. They've only blocked it in Germany. So,
Yes.
Is that what we're saying?
I suspect so.
Hmm.
So, and it said if
I'm rapidly trying to read this as well.
So. If you're following along, it says tweet withheld. So it actually published the fact that there was a tweet made, and it said tweet withheld. The tweet from @username has been withheld in country, and obviously specified what country it was withheld in. So then an option to learn more. So yes, withheld on a country specific.
Yeah.
Base.
So what I'm reading here, they're not allowing that to be shown in Germany, but they are allowing it in the US because they feel that blocking it would be a problem with the United States freedom of speech laws. Whereas in Germany, as you said, that kind of speech is illegal. So yeah, I guess they're trying to comply with multiple legal systems there.
Hmm. All right. Interesting that they have the technology to do that, and interesting that they've thought about doing that. Because
and interestingly that we're looking at it purely as a legal problem and not as a moral issue, which would add another complete dimension to this particular problem. But yeah,
it's a shame that actually it's come to this. But I guess when you're looking at these social networking sites, there does need to be some form of control. Because certain things just go a bit too far. And when it's against the law in a specific country.
There's always a legal boundary somewhere and there's always a moral boundary somewhere, and those two things aren't always in the same place. So, it is an interesting problem sometimes.
Now, whilst on the subject of strange things that happen on the internet... Sorry, this is not the odd spot. I hope I haven't stolen anything from you here, Dr. Ron.
You're about to find out.
Google has lashed out... Google is known to do.
Safe. Lashed.
Safe topic.
Lashes against French pay-for-search tax. Yes, the French are looking to tax Google on a pay-for-search thing. Ah, yes, everyone's laughing. But anyway.
Just Google or every search engine?
French media sites will be removed from Google's index if the country goes ahead with a law that will require search engines to pay for content through a special tax.
Right, so every search engine?
Yeah. The proposed law is the result of lobbying by French publishers who object to Google earning advertising revenue by linking to their account. They want Google and other search engines to be legally mandated to compensate them, an idea that has found favour with the French Minister of Culture. And I'm not going to pronounce his name because Graham will only laugh at me. No, don't, I'm not going there, Graham, unless you want to have a bash. It's got lots of those funny squiggly things above the letters. In response, Google France wrote to the minister saying that it would cease to index French media sites if the law was passed. Them's fighting words. In a letter, Google France said it sent some 4 billion readers to French media players, media pages, in fact, every month. So... good argument, I would have thought, because people click through and read articles. Isn't that what it's all about?
It's what it's all about. Yeah.
Who's missing the point here?
Someone's missing the point. Someone's certainly missing the point.
Anyway, that's what lashing's all about, okay. Really, isn't it?
Aurélie Filippetti, I would
guess. Is that how you pronounce it?
I would guess.
Oh.
Aurélie?
It wasn't he in the... in
Filippetti doesn't look French at all. That looks
Sounds Italian,
doesn't it?
Wasn't the O'Reilly men?
No. That was the Aurélie men.
The Aurélie men with the garden gnomes.
Basil
Poltys.
Mr. O'Reilly.
Mr. O'Reilly. Yeah. Put that garden gnome somewhere, wasn't it? Yes. Yeah, that was a good show, wasn't it? In New Zealand, the first three strike cases fell through. Sorry, you want to backpedal a bit there, Graham?
Oh, just to the French Minister of Culture.
Yeah.
You referred to him as a hymn.
What's a her?
She's a she.
Sorry.
Or Ali.
Fembot.
Yeah. she's a woman.
There you go. Sorry, I'm not good with my French. Never have been. I did Mandarin when I was at school. What did you do, Dr. Ron?
I studied French and Indonesian and Chinese.
Oh, so you should have read that. You did Chinese too, did you?
Did, for a very, very short time.
Yeah. Okay.
Mandarin.
Good. Mandarin. Ni hao ma.
Ni hao.
Yeah. Graham's gone very quiet. You went to the same school as we did.
I did, and that's about all I learned of Mandarin too.
Oh, dearie me. And now for something completely different. What I was saying before, the first New Zealand three strikes case fell through. Remember how that if you got into trouble with downloading things you shouldn't in New Zealand, they were going to send you a letter?
You had one strike, two strikes, three strikes, and then your internet service was cut off.
Well, yes.
Supposedly.
And in this case, the Recording Industry Association of New Zealand withdrew its first legal case of alleged file sharing, which was going to be heard by the Copyright Tribunal.
Yep.
They didn't disclose the reasons. That's the Record Industry Association of New Zealand. They didn't disclose the reasons for withdrawing the case, which involved the alleged downloading of all but five songs.
Five songs?
Yeah.
And typically these cases involve a poor elderly woman who downloads four Barry Manilow songs or something.
Well, that's probably it.
Yeah.
She was probably doing some... Oh, no, I won't go there. But yes. No.
I don't know where you were going to go there. No.
Anyway, the defendant was in fact a student, actually.
Oh, a struggling student.
Yeah,
yeah, hard working from a disadvantaged background, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but she was supported by some pro bono civil rights lobby groups and tech people in New Zealand. And
oh,
all
that's
that sort
nice.
Of stuff. So she had some friends on her side.
Yes,
as she went into battle the tribunal, which the RI Recording Industry Association of New Zealand decided to withdraw. Three strikes and you're not out. You live to bat another day. Sorry?
Oh, dear. It's the right approach to go after the actual offenders, but it never, ever works out for them, does it?
No. There's obviously some form of something there that they were bothered by. And
well, the public relations just isn't good, is it? It's just not a good image.
No, indeed. Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7 is still unfinished, yet Windows 8 is coming out shortly. What do you make of that, Graham?
Yeah, that's going to go well, isn't it?
Well, this is just Microsoft at the moment, whether it be for whatever reason. But they announced that it...
They seem determined to cripple this Windows product, this Windows product line that they've had going for a while. It's on its last legs.
They've announced that they will release a version of its long-awaited Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7 in the middle of next month to coincide with the general availability of the new Windows 8 operating system. Yet it's not finished. There's a beta launch in the midst of... Okay. Just to add confusion.
But it's only in beta on other platforms. It'll be production on Windows 8.
Well, will it?
Presumably. It's pretty embedded in the system.
Yeah. Despite being released in the final version of Windows 8, development of the next Internet Explorer browser for Windows 7 has been a slow process for Microsoft. The current preview of IE 10 for Windows 7 was released a year ago, and no updates since then. What's going on? Is it just that the market for... No one's using IE, or it's...
No. Everybody's happily using IE 9 on Windows 7. No, they just need to... The only reason they want to keep the Internet Explorer version in line across their current products, which is Windows 7.
Yeah.
But at the moment, they're obviously focusing on Windows 8 development, and they're not focusing on the development of the IE product for Windows 7.
They're wilfing. They've gone off to play Windows 8 and forgotten about Windows 7, have they?
Well, they haven't forgotten. They just have a priority issue because they've got to get Windows 8 out. God knows why. No one's going to use it. No one's going to want it.
Ooh.
Just a correction to what we said earlier in the program. We were unsure about the release date of Windows 8. We thought it was next month, not this month.
But October the 26th.
It is, in fact, in a week.
Yeah.
Really? Gee whiz, we're all excited about that, aren't we?
October 26th for Windows 8, and that subset Windows Phone 8 will launch on October the 29th.
Oh, there you go.
We're all completely and utterly disinterested, aren't we? We just weren't across that at all. We just have a complete conflict of lack of interest.
But I don't think we're the only ones, are we?
No, we're not. Certainly not the only ones, no.
Well, a lot of people are interested, but in the same way that people sort of crane their heads to look at a car smash on the side of the road.
Well, like with a morbid curiosity,
exactly,
you think,
Graham. Yes. Something very like that.
One thing's for certain, people aren't going to be queuing up outside, you know, computer retailers to buy it on the night before, like you do at Apple stores.
No, people are not camping out outside the Microsoft shop to buy a Surface tablet with Windows 8 on it.
People are going
to
be saying, you first. No, you first. No, no, you first.
Are we going to have a rollback option like we did with Vista that you could roll back to XP? Are you going to see the rollback options, do you think, from Windows 8 to Windows 7?
Yeah, what Microsoft called downgrade rights. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Is it going to be another Vista? I don't expect an answer to that. It's a rhetorical question, really.
My feeling, I'm going to give you an answer. My feeling is yes, it is going to be another Vista. It's going to be a product that is going to be a stepping stone in between Windows 7, which is a good operating system, and whatever their next good one is, if they have a next good one.
I don't think they can afford another Vista. I really don't.
We were talking about this after the program last week, weren't we? We're saying, what are the alternatives for desktop operating systems?
Well, and Windows 8 is not going to be usable for a lot of people.
Not in a corporate just world.
No one's going to install this on a business computer in an office.
That's right. Yeah, from a productivity point of view, you need, most environments, you can need to have a keyboard and a pointing device that works.
Yeah.
You can't be sitting in front of just a touch screen and swishing stuff around with your finger when you're trying to actually, write something or...
And it's very clear that this operating system is designed for consumers, for casual users, not for serious users of Windows, not for business users of Windows. Mm. I've been turning this over in my head trying to figure out what their strategy is or what their plans might be. Are they going to split the product line again? Are they going to bring out another operating system for business that's separate for them from their consumer operating system? Because we used to have that. We used to have the Windows 95, 98
An NT line. Or something, didn't we?
Well, but NT was the other line, was the line that was used in business. So you had Windows NT on your business computer and you had Windows 95 on your home computer. And I'm wondering whether this new Windows Metro...
you can't call it that anymore.
Well, but that's what it is.
What used to be called Windows Metro.
Is the new home version. And because it's good. I just can't see a business ever choosing to install this on their business machines.
Mm. Well, in the car park edition we did last night after the last week after the show, I think the conclusion that we drew was the fact that Windows 7 is rock solid. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if there's no real reason or no real advantage to change, then don't.
Mm. Interesting, in the chat, Gareth said no one has Windows 7 in business. Warlock says we're rolling out Windows 7 at the moment. And I think Warlock's right, and I think Gareth's wrong. I think a lot of businesses are now realising Windows 7's a great operating system and moving to it.
I'm using
Windows
7.
The only reason 7. We were so slow in business environments to move to 7 was because anyone who took the plunge onto Vista got burned so badly.
Yes.
And Windows XP in business is a great operating system.
Yeah. Well, we use Windows 7 for no other reason than the software that we use is certified on Windows 7.
Right.
So it sort of means that,
I think you're the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah, probably. But, look, it's the stuff we've been using in the 64-bit environment's been rock solid. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, Cisco in the chat is also in IT, and his customers, including the biggest customers, still use XP.
Wow.
And pay extra to downgrade from 7 to XP. So you buy SA, a software assurance, to get the right to do the downgrade.
Interesting enough, Windows Office 2013 is also about to hit the downloads and the shops and things like that. Obviously, it's really destined for the new tablet-based or Metro-based Windows 8.
Yeah.
But they're actually saying that Microsoft is going to offer free upgrades to the new 2013 productivity suite to new purchases of 2010.
Yeah, which is typically what they do just before a new launch. Yeah.
So if you're out there, you can probably safely buy, if you're in the market, 2010 and just hang on to that upgrade in such time that you want to do it. Will 2013 run on Windows 7? I haven't looked at it probably yet.
I imagine it probably will.
Normally they do, don't they?
Usually
they work on previous
they'll work on
versions.
The current versions of their operating systems, yeah. Mm. It'll be interesting to see what Office 2013 like. Office 2010 was a huge improvement over Office 2007.
Oh, the ribbon.
Yeah, well, they've refined the ribbon and made it nice.
And they brought back the paperclip. I used to love the paperclip. Remember the paperclip?
I do remember the paperclip.
You need help. Are you trying to write a letter?
Yeah. Would you like
Dear
me
Dr.
to bleep
Ron.
It up for you? Yeah.
And the dog that used to come and scratch on the corner there.
The search assistant, he's still there, isn't he? Little dog?
Little Einstein guy?
Yeah, when you search for something, I think
still
little,
there,
little
is
dog
he?
Still no, pops up.
Does he on yours?
I haven't seen him.
I think so.
Yeah, but you're still running Windows 95, aren't you?
You must be.
Yeah. R2?
Next. No, R2, yeah. on your 8-bit machine.
That's it? Come on. SR2, yeah.
That's it, right. SR2, yeah.
Dr. Ron, we have to talk after the show.
Okay, all right. look at the time. Just briefly, Microsoft profits fall as PCs fizzle was another headline that caught my eye as it went across the tables this week. Microsoft's quarterly profit fell a greater than expected 22% as sales of computers running its Windows operating system dipped and some revenue was deferred ahead of upcoming release of the new Windows and Office products.
Yeah, that's a lot of that isn't. A lot of that's the normal cycle at this time of year, and it's also in the normal cycle just before a new product launch. A lot of Microsoft sales, particularly of Windows, are not sales made by Microsoft. They're sales made by HP and Dell and Acer, and the operating system gets sold with it. So what's also happening now is that because Windows 8 is about to come out, the actual hardware is about to change as well, because all the old models that did not have a touchscreen are going to be replaced by new models that do have a touchscreen. So they're winding down their existing models. Ready that, you know, week or so, they'll hopefully have new models that will have touchscreens. So that's not a Microsoft issue. That's just part of the cycle.
Oddspot, gadget, app, and website of the week is coming your way after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra is the only carrier that can do location-based early warning.
Yes, make a sweeping generalisation.
By here. Absolutely.
Oh, please tell me they printed the CCV as well.
Yeah.
The tile change to offer you updates at a glance.
You sound like a climate change skeptic. What did you think I was going to say?
Who knows?
Time is an illusion.
Lunchtime, doubly so.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This time next week, Graeme, we'll have a new HTC One XL. That's our gadget this week.
I'm not convinced about that yet.
We've been talking about this in the break.
I don't think the phone's the issue, it's the plan.
The latest Android-powered smartphone from HTC. It has a 4.7-inch touchscreen, which offers 1280 by 720 resolution, 1.5 gigahertz dual-core processor, 32 gigabytes of storage, 1 gigabyte of RAM. It's 4G and LTE compliant in Australia, and I'm getting great speeds.
On the Telstra network, anyway.
On the Telstra Next-G network, absolutely.
But only in the city.
Only where you've got 4G coverage.
Or when you're up the top of your place, on top of that hill.
Now, when you're not in 4G coverage, it has got DC HSPA on it, though, hasn't it?
That's right, dual cell.
Yeah, which is blindingly fast 3G as well.
It is. It's good 3G. Also, it's an 8-megapixel camera with autofocus.
8 megapixels.
And
I've had proper cameras that are less megapixels than that.
I'll show you some images and some photos I've taken, Graham. Some great
I can't
ones.
Wait to see.
It's good. It also has a 1.3-megapixel front camera, so you can do video chat. Standard battery capacity is 1,800 milliamp hours. For more info, go
don't
to
mention the war.
How do you know
so much about this phone, Dr. Ron?
I know because I have one.
Are
you endorsing a product?
I'm telling you that I've got one of these, and they work very well. I'm not paid by HTC. I'm not receiving any money for saying what I've just said. No cash for comments. No, but it's a great device, and I'm very happy with it. For more info, htc.com/au, our gadget, the HTC One XL.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Spoke about this last week, app.net, app.net. The new Twitter, it'll cost you a bit of cash, but that's what it's all about. $5 a month.
How are you finding it?
Yeah, really good. $5 a month for 1 month of service.
We're all there.
Or $36 so a year for 12 months of service.
If you feel like you don't know anyone up there, we're there, so come along and talk to us.
If you're getting sick of sponsored tweets.
I am.
If you're getting sick of the way that Twitter treats its developers with contempt and making all these bizarre API changes. If you're a developer, you can sign up for $100 a year and you get 1 year of service with developer access to the app.net API. If you're skeptical, watch the 3-minute video by the founder and CEO of app.net, who's Dalton Caldwell. It's been built as a new social media service with no advertisements, no sponsored tweets, no promoted posts, nothing of the sort, because it makes money from its members.
As opposed to its advertisers.
As opposed to its advertisers.
Yeah.
You're also not limited to 140 characters, 256 characters.
in a post they've decided.
Yeah, you get a bit extra length, don't
you? Which is nice. And they look after their development channel, unlike Twitter, if I didn't already say that.
It's interesting. Actually, that's an interesting technological development, that SMS is now irrelevant.
Yeah, because that was the reason why they said, look, SMS messages, 160 characters, will make Twitter tweets 140 characters so I can put some extra information in there for usernames and headroom. But now it's just not relevant at all, as Graham says.
Yeah, interesting.
Log on now and you'll get a great username.
While there's a few out there.
While there's a few out there. Yeah. That's our website, Andrew, app.net. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Lena is at the Games Conference Asia Pacific meetup at GCAP at Jeff's Shed at the moment. There's a GCAP app.
What does it do?
GCAP is going eco-friendly and smart. They're minimising their environmental impact by limiting the number of printed materials, and they created an optimised mobile application.
Just for the conference?
Just for the conference.
Cute.
Doesn't require a download. It runs on all popular platforms. If you go to the website, it works out what you've got and optimises what it's going to show you on the screen of your device. iPhone, BlackBerry, Android, Palm, Windows Mobile, Nokia, as well as any tablet such as iPad and Galaxy. Also runs in
covers
browsers.
Covers them all, really, doesn't it?
On PC and Mac. It does. So they have an interactive agenda. Attendees can create and edit their schedule on the go. Speakers and sessions are easily searchable. Attendees can create detailed profiles and search the entire listing to find exactly the right people they want to meet. GCAP.com.au is where to go. That's our application, Andrew. GCAP's online application.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
At a secluded country house where Britain's top computer scientists cracked the unbreakable Nazi Enigma code.
Yes, 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 yes.
A hunt is underway to find new cyber spies from the Xbox generation.
Bletchley Park or something, isn't it?
It's Bletchley Park, right? Yeah. Well done. Foreign Secretary William Hague said the government was now looking for up to 100 Xbox apprentices for Britain's intelligence agencies to emulate the men and women who worked at Bletchley Park, the former code-breaking centre just north of London, once the most secret place in Britain.
And one of the most fascinating episodes in the history, or several episodes in the history of technology. Read up on Bletchley Park, guys. Really worth your time.
The apprenticeship scheme aims to recruit talented potential code-breakers and computer scientists from school pupils and university students, mainly to the Government Communications Headquarters, GCHQ, the State Eavesdropping Service. It's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
And that's the show for this week. Thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys. Thank you, everyone, on our chat. It's fun on the chat. You should be there if you're not. That's our little thing that runs every night as we go to air.
Don't,
but anyway,
don't forget to register for the not one but two events that are coming up in the first week of December. There's Monday the 3rd.
There is indeed.
And Tuesday the 4th.
Six to go. Till then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.